Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A special shukran to Imam Muhammad Ali Ilahi of the Islamic House of Wisdom in Dearborn Heights for his courage, his conviction, and his support.
Well, now here's the thing. You've heard, you think everything that you, you've heard everything that Reverend Wright has said. You're wrong. You've heard only the highlights of what Reverend Wright has said on every show in America, and rightly so. But I have investigated this shock frock. And my good staff has gone back to the NAACP speech from this weekend. And what we found the shock frock said is far worse than you think. Now, the reason I'm calling him a shock frock is simple. The left wing likes to marginalize geniuses like Michael Savage by calling us shock jocks. Of course, they're jealous of various attributes that we have, not the least of which is intelligence, insight, the ability to portray reality in the way we do on the spur of the moment. So they call us shock jocks, even though they know it's an insult. So I'm now called, but they don't call Reverend Wright a shock anything. They don't even call him the controversial reverend. When have you seen them refer to him in any negative way? They don't. They call him the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. So from now on, he's going to be referred to as a shock frock, a phrase I invented for you in the toilet a few minutes ago. Because this shock frock is far more dangerous than you think. Now, I have to thank someone before I begin what we found, because what we found, you're never going to forget. I was reading this morning Heather McDonald's article called Poisonous Authenticity in City Journal, and I put it up on michaelsavage.com, top left. You got to download this article. What she did was is she went and listened to the speech, and she dug stuff up that we went, my staff went and spent all day getting the actual statements, because you're not going to believe it. And one of the statements we'll begin with is this one. He says that white teachers freaked out because the black children did not stay in their place over there behind the desk. Instead, the students, quote, climbed up all over the teachers because they learned from a subject, not an object, close quote. Now, how anybody can learn from a teacher by treating a teacher as a subject by climbing on her, as opposed from learning from an object such as a book, or by listening to her, is a mystery to anyone except Reverend Wright. And so I want to play that piece for you. So clip five is the beginning. Go ahead.
Several of the white teachers in my school freaked out. Why? Because black kids wouldn't stay in their place. Over there, behind the desk, black kids climbed up all on them. Because they learned from a subject, not from an object. Tell me a story. They have a different way of learning.
You see, now this man is not crazy. He's stupid. I've actually figured out that he's not bright. He's actually an idiot. What he did was he took ideas from various dim-witted intellectuals over the years, Afrocentric imbeciles, who got their positions largely through affirmative action and then started putting out the mumbo-jumbo that, of course, is authentically garbage. And he took pieces of this mumbo-jumbo here and there, and he latched onto these pieces, and then he spits it out, and he thinks that he's an intellectual giant. Now, I would think that the NAACP audience would have been shocked and outraged by the concept that acting out in class is authentically black, that stepping on a teacher's head is authentically black. But by the laughter in the audience, I would suspect that some of the dignified guests in the NAACP audience, including that goofball Cornel West from Harvard, was actually affirming that stepping on a teacher's head is authentically something or other. But can I ask you something? Do you think that you should accept the idea that blacks should not be expected to listen attentively to instruction in a classroom? Do you think that's the right message from the shock frock, Reverend Wright? Are we to now expect black kids to not sit in there a place at a desk like other kids, but that they cannot learn because they're from another culture? Is he now arguing that there is a reverse bell curve? Or maybe it's even worse. He's arguing that there is a bell curve, but the whites are at the bottom of it, and the blacks who can't sit still and step on a teacher are at the top of the bell curve. Did you hear what I just said? The top of the bell curve. So this is an idea that you have to comprehend how dangerous this man's ideas really are. And that is, he is not really an Afrocentrist. He's an Afro-Maoist. M-A-O-I-S-T. He derives a lot of this drivel from petty intellectuals who were advanced because of their genius, of course, not because of their skin color, who then put out their notions that are so harebrained that they could only be published in sociological journals. But if you actually analyze what these harebrains have written, you will find that it's Mao Tse-tung's ideas in the United States of America. And I want to remind you what we're talking about here. He's a revolutionary, just as Mao Tse-tung was a revolutionary in China. Mao Tse-tung was responsible for the deaths of 60 million Chinese people. He eliminated the entire Chinese middle class. One of his disciples in Cambodia, Pol Pot, who was a nice guy, went to Paris. He studied Marxism in Paris, came back, and he killed 2 million people, mountains of skulls in Cambodia, if you remember. Anyone who wore eyeglasses was considered a counter-revolutionary and was killed. So Cambodia lost its entire middle class of teachers, doctors, lawyers, engineers, accountants, and you name it. They wiped them out. That's why Cambodia is now a toilet bowl. There's nothing there. He wiped out the entire middle class because of his Maoism. If a guy like Wright was taken seriously, we'd have a Maoist revolution in America, and the entire white middle class would be wiped out, along with the black middle class, incidentally, and we would have a disaster on our hands. We'd have mountains of skulls, and we'd have a nation going thrown back 500 years, if not further back. And that's why I'm going to play for you some of the dangerous statements that the shock frock made this weekend at the NAACP. Again, you know, at this point in the day, you think you've heard everything that the shock frock has said, but you haven't. You just heard the tips of the iceberg. But because of McDonald's article and my staff's work for the last 10 hours, 8 hours, we have actually gotten some of the shock frock's horrible, revolutionary statements that would decimate the United States of America in a way that you can't even imagine. It's also very racist, by the way. It's extremely racist, putting down even John F. Kennedy. And I played that piece for you yesterday. It's amazing to me that no one in the media caught that, that the man attacked an icon of the Democrat Party, John F. Kennedy, because of the way Kennedy spoke, when in fact Kennedy was probably one of the most brilliant presidents we've had in the last 50 years, incidentally, as evidenced by what Kennedy wrote. None of the other presidents have written jack. Nothing of any merit whatsoever. Now, I want you to understand what comes up next is so shocking that you're going to hear what the shock frock says in clip 6.
Those same children who have difficulty reading from an object and who are labeled EMH, TMH, and ADD, those children can say every word from every song on every hip-hop radio station, half of whose words the average adult here tonight cannot understand. Why? Because they come from a right brain, creative, oral culture like the griots in Africa who can go for 2 to 3 days as oral repositories of a people's history. And like the oral tradition, we pass down the first 5 books in our Jewish Bible, our Christian Bible, our Hebrew Bible, long before there was a written Hebrew script.
So he's now comparing hip-hop lyrics such as Off That Cop, Do That Ho, to the Bible. He's now comparing Do That Ho and Off That Pig to the 5 books of Moses. This man is a certifiable lunatic and a dangerous one at that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
children and African-American children have a different way of learning. They are right-brain, subject-oriented in their learning styles. Right-brain, that means creative and intuitive. Subject-oriented means they learn not from an object, but from a subject. They learn from a person. Several of the white teachers in my school freaked out. Why? Because black kids wouldn't stay in their place. Over there, behind the desk, black kids climbed up all on them. Because they learn from a subject, not from an object. Tell me a story. They have a different way of learning.
So here's a man approving of racist concepts that blacks can't sit in the chair and learn, that they can't logically learn. He's saying that their self-destructive behavior in schools is just excellent and the mark of a superior personality. And what he's going to do here is perpetuate the dysfunction of the kids in school who won't learn and can't learn. He's then saying, for example, at this NAACP speech, that if you pursue a higher degree by sitting for hours in a library and studying and writing a thesis, the shock frock, right, said that that's white. He said blacks, by contrast, according to Heather McDonald, cannot sit still in class. They can't learn from quiet study, and they have difficulty learning from objects, such as books. But instead they learn from subjects, such as rap lyrics on the radio. Do you have any idea what this is saying? Do you have any concept why this is so important for you to hear? Because this didn't come out of the blue. This is the kind of stuff this man was disseminating, this poison, in his church for 20 years. And I got to tell you, the Trinity United Church that Obama, and this is all about Obama, isn't it? Otherwise, this shock frock wouldn't even be recognized. He's climbing on the shoulders of his own disciple because he was not happy that the disciple outshone him, which I said Monday, and I'm glad to see has been picked up by some of the luminaries in the media. It's a sort of Abraham and Isaac, father and son a thing here. But put that aside. This shock frock is important because these ideas were disseminated not just Saturday night at the NAACP, but for the past 20 years while Obama sat there saying he didn't hear it. So the question is, how deeply have these crackpot, twisted, anti-white ideas penetrated the DNA of Obama and his wife? How deeply is this racial hatred embedded in Obama's mind is the question America's asking itself today. But it gets much worse. The man says children who have trouble reading can remember every word from every song and every hip-hop radio station. And that's good. That shows an oral tradition. Listen to how he attacks President Johnson now, another Democrat, in clip 7.
Johnson stepped up to the podium in Love Field, and Johnson said, "My fellow Americans." How do you spell fellow? How do you spell Americans? Nobody says to Johnson, "You speak bad English."
Well, there's a difference between speaking English with an accent and being correct, grammatically correct, and speaking English, let us say, not only in a bad accent, but in an unintelligible fashion, as with Obonics, and having no comprehension of grammar. But again, that's lost on this Maoist who would like to see a revolution on the order of Pol Pot in Cambodia. KNEW, Tony, go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I was just calling because I think some of the stuff that Pastor Wright says is true and some of it is not.
All right, so why don't you tell us quickly what you think he says that's true?
Like, for instance, like the Tuskegee Airmen, they were given the syphilis and all that stuff and experiments, the same thing that was done.
I know, but it's been acknowledged as a horrible, terrible thing. So what does that have to do with the price of eggs?
So he
takes a truism like that. That's like saying that slavery was bad, which it was, and so therefore everything else the crackpot says is true?
No, I disagree with a lot of stuff, but I think some of the stuff that he says is true, you should at least give him credit on some of the stuff that he says that is true.
But what has he said that's true? Tell me what he said that's true.
For instance, the 9/11 cover-up. I don't know if you really did research on that, but
there is no 9/11 cover-up. You bought into this black liberation lie because you hate America.
No, Dr. Savage.
You want to believe that Jews did it, right? What do you believe? Farrakhan has said 5,000 Jews fled the Twin Towers before the attack? Is that what you believe?
No, I love Israel, Dr. Savage. I
don't care what you love. Now you're telling me that we brought down the Twin Towers again. You know, look, this is what we're talking about. When you start listening to hate like from a shock frock like him, you can believe anything, Tony. Anything can become real to you. If you start believing that a black kid can't learn because he has a different brain than a white kid, that he has the right to jump on a teacher's head because that's African, where do you go from there?
I don't believe that, Dr. Savage.
Oh, good. As long as you don't believe it. He's going to perpetuate stupidity and turn these kids into a lifetime of slavery. That's what he's doing. He's enslaving his own people with this rubbish. And I don't really care about this crackpot, this shock frock. I wouldn't give him 2 cents. I put him in the same category as that other street hustler. He's a little more eloquent than that other one that said he shut down New York the other day. The other one with the bullhorn who caused Freddie's Fashion Mart fire. That one who's respected now by Fox News. You know, okay, he's another one just like that, but maybe a little bit smarter than him. I put him in the same category, but I wouldn't be talking about him if it wasn't about a presidential candidate who sat in this man's lap for 20 years and listened to his rubbish. And this is the dangerous part of this shock frock. Listen to what he's saying. It's the most racist rhetoric I have heard in my contemporary life. I can't imagine what would happen if a white man got up and gave a speech saying the same things. What if a white man got up and said that blacks cannot pursue higher degrees because that's white and they have a different brain? That blacks cannot sit still in a class or learn from quiet study because they can only learn from subjects such as rap lyrics on the radio. What if a white man got up and said that students who climbed up all over the teachers because they learned from a subject, not an object, proves that black kids are not equal to white kids, and that's why they can't learn and why their grades are lower than blacks, whites, and Asians? What would happen if a white man said that? You'd call him every name under the sun. You'd be screaming. Why, that bullhorn fraud would be marching and saying he'd shut down America, wouldn't he? Well, he'd be right to be angry. But not when the crackpot shock frock says it. Then it's okay.
Savage.
We are committed to changing the way we treat each other. The way the so-called haves and have-mores, to use Bush's speechwriter's term, don't y'all think he made that up? Come on now. The way the haves and the have-mores treat the have-nots, the way the educated treat the uneducated, the way those with degrees treat those who never made it through high school, the way those of us who never got caught treat those of us who are incarcerated, making rehabilitation a priority over incarceration.
Now, you got to understand what this man has just said. He's just said that if you have an education, you are suspect. He's also said that if you have no degree or no education at all, you're basically a hero. He's incorporating Maoism. And I got to explain what Mao Zedong did to China for you to understand the danger of this man. And the reason I'm harping on this is because there's a man who's gotten away. So far, he sailed through because of the New York Times, the L.A. Times, the homosexual mafia in New York and Hollywood, who were the first to fund Barack Obama, by the way. And I want to reiterate that. The homosexual billionaires and multimillionaires of Hollywood were the first to jump aboard his bandwagon for one reason only. He said he would make homosexual marriage his first priority. You don't have to believe me. Just trust me on it. And take a look at where the money came first. It came from the moguls of Hollywood, who happen to be homosexual, who have put a homosexual marriage above all other problems in America. They're the first ones to jump on his bandwagon and leave Hillary, by the way. They were always liberal. They were always Democrats. But now they found their man. Now, the important thing here is, who is the man they found? Is he simply a good liberal? Or is there something now inherently in his brain structure from having listened to this a shock frock for 20 years that borders on not the insane, but the revolutionary. And what kind of revolution are we talking about? Are we talking about a peaceful revolution that Obama would foist upon America, or a violent revolution where criminals are released from the jails and they conduct wholesale slaughter of the middle class because that would set the table straight? What exactly is it that's in Obama's head that he's not telling us? Well, we're all getting a little reflection of what may be in there through his minister, the shock frock, Mr. Wright, whatever his name is. He just said something about how we disrespect people in prison. We disrespect them because we all commit crime, but only some of us get caught for it. That's what he just said. Now, again, I got to go back to the great Heather McDonald article, which is now linked up on michaelsavage.com, top left. You must print it up. And I want to read what she wrote. This argument recalls the bizarre doctrines of University of Pennsylvania law professor Regina Austin. In a widely reprinted California Law Review article from 1992, Austin asserted that the black community should embrace the criminals in its midst as a form of resistance to white oppression. She said people of color should view hustling as a good middle ground between straightness and more extreme forms of lawbreaking. Examples of hustling include, quote, clerks in stores who cut their friends a break on merchandise, and pilfering employees who spread their contraband around the neighborhood, close quote. It never occurs to Austin that these black thieves may have black employers who suffer the effects of black crime, as do the larger neighborhoods of which they form the essential fabric. Officially incorporating crime into the black identity, as Austin and Wright do, is a pathetic admission of defeat and marginalization. So you see how dangerous this is? Now, if you think he's alone in this, you're wrong. You are wrong. This rubbish is being taught to your children in colleges and in high schools today under the guise of ethnic studies, under the guise of multicultural studies. This hatred is going into your little girl's mind. The little girl that you think is so precious to you, the little boy that you dream so much for, his mind is being washed and poisoned by hateful teachers who require him to take ethnic studies to get a college degree. It used to be that you had to study Spanish or French or German or Russian in order to get a bachelor's degree. Today you need to study this hateful dissemination of hatred and racism in order to get a degree. And the children are coming out mentally twisted. James, W-O-R, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How are you, Dr. Savage? In order for me to get my master's degree in education, I had to essentially sit through indoctrination sessions like this.
Correct.
With black children.
That's what I said. That's called Maoism. What we're going through in America for the last 30 years as a result of, and by the way, the blacks didn't start this. It's the white communist left-wingers like Obama's friend Ayers and the others who have done this. They have done this to this country. There's a mini Maoist revolution going on in the country, which is why an unknown nobody like Obama could get this far, why a used up hag like Hillary could get this far, and why a burnt out suitcase like McCain could get this far. It's because the country has not been dumbed down. It's been anesthetized.
And part of the lessons also were just that we shouldn't correct kids' grammar, that it's judgmental, and that we should accept their Ebonics and not teach them standard English. As it would hurt their self-esteem.
Right. So this all comes from stupid professors who were pushed ahead because of affirmative action. And then in order to prove that they're not stupid, they then reconfirm their stupidity by saying, we're right, you're wrong. It's Alice in Wonderland, in other words, upside down. So all of Western civilization is evil, and all of African civilization is good. And if we follow this insanity, this Afrocentric pedagogy, what do you think would occur? Tell me what would occur if this Afrocentric crackpot pedagogy were to incorporate itself into the minds of the president, into the mind of the president of the United States. Tell me what would happen.
Well, I mean, you see more of it being taught, I'm sure. But as a black man myself, I just found it extremely insulting, and I would confront the professors all the time. This is an insulting thing to say that we can't learn.
Right, but you're a black guy, but was the teacher a white person teaching it to you or a black person?
Absolutely. No, the teachers were all white who would teach these.
Oh, old Doc Savage pulled it out, didn't he? Pulled the rabbit out of the hat. I know who's disseminating this hate. These are all stone-hearted, radical Leninist, Marxist, communists who want to bring it all down, girl. And the best way to do it is to use the uneducated, the violent, to overthrow the society, James. You understand that?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Well, thank God they can't wash everyone's brain, James. See, you're the new generation of young black, and you find reality reality, and you find this as offensive as I do. I know you do.
Well, let me tell you this much. If you do go against that and you start speaking out against it, what the schools will do is fire you, which is exactly what happened to me.
What do you mean fired you? They fired you as a teacher?
As a teacher, that's correct. I didn't have tenure. I was basically demanding that they enforce the rules of the school, rules against violence, rules against profanity, institute some kind of detention system. They didn't like my ideas, even though in the books they're supposed to have a 100% intolerance toward violence and things of that nature, but they would not enforce any kind of discipline, so they let me go for bringing it up so often.
What school, what type of school, what level?
Public school, middle school, Bronx, New York.
But what, part of the New York Board of Education?
Exactly.
They fired you because you wanted to support discipline?
Absolutely, and you would think...
So what are you doing now? I hope you're not unemployed.
No, I'm a soldier in the United States Army.
Well, believe me, you made a better career choice. But you know, James, I can't believe what you're telling me. I find it incomprehensible.
I'm not alone.
You know what? You know, James, if I had heard you were unemployed, what I was going to do was actually get your number and have someone offer you a job. But thank God you have the best employment that you can get right now, which is defending our freedoms and my ability to continue to have this dialogue without all of us being put in the dungeon of our own mind. God bless you, man. Thanks for calling the show. Now, if you think this is bad, it is what you heard so far, but it's going to get worse. The shock frock, again, would be a marginal Afrocentric hater who nobody paid attention to were it not for Obama. And the question that I keep coming back to is, how much of this hatred for white people and for society in general has infected Obama's DNA by this point? How far has this multicultural rubbish penetrated Obama's soul? Do you know that there was a book called The Disuniting of America, written in 1991 by Arthur Schlesinger, and he was warning America about the dangers of multiculturalism? And the reason he was is because he was alerting us to a faulty 10th-rate scholar named Hilliard, an Afrocentric scholar, who urged schools to teach blacks that Egypt was a black country, that Africans invented birth control and carbon steel, that blacks discovered America long before Columbus, that Robert Browning and Ludwig von Beethoven were Afro-European, ready for this, and that the Atlantic Ocean was originally named the Ethiopian Ocean. This was taught and is being taught today, probably to your children, by these 10th-rate mini-minds who have gotten their jobs as a result of the white liberal who wants to bring it all down, girl. You understand that? So I'm not going to stop. I'm going to actually go on. I'm now going to shift into fifth gear from fourth gear and play you some of the other stuff that my incredible staff, they put down the Elmers for the day, and they went to work for 8 hours. I know it's been a long, hard day for them with no Elmer's glue, but they got stuff that you can't believe. Here goes clip two. Listen to this one now.
Lovers of George Frederick Handel and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart saw lovers of B.B. King and Frankie Beverly and Mays as deficient. Lovers of Marian Anderson saw lovers of Lady Day and Anita Baker as deficient. Lovers of European cantatas, come for thee, and the glory of the Lord. Lovers of European cantatas saw lovers of common meter. Saw them as deficient.
Well, if you're not deficient, Johnson, I'd like to know who is. If you're not the mark of a demagogical maniac, I'd like to know what is. If you're not the definition of the most dangerous man the African community has ever produced in the United States of America, I'd like to know who is. If you're not an example of everything wrong with multiculturalism, Reverend Wright, I'd like to know who is. And if you are not out to destroy Barack Hussein Obama because you're a jealous old man, I'd like to know why you've done this to him. I'll be right back.
Listen to the University of Michigan and Michigan State University bands at halftime. Their bands hit the field with excellent European precision. Dun 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 da 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 da. Now go to a Florida A&M and Grambling band. It's different, and you can't put that in no book.
So is he implying that black folks can't march in precision? They can only kind of do things randomly, like in a Grambling formation? Is he arguing that? What is he saying? Is he encouraging children not to follow orders, for example, in a military parade? And much worse, how about in a military campaign against the enemy? Does he wish some folks in a military campaign to jump up and kind of do a Grambling move against the enemy? Captain says, I want you to all be precise in how we defend ourselves against the enemy who's dug in on that hillside. Lieutenant, you're going to go to the left flank. Sergeant, you're going to take four men to the right flank. And what, a guy in the back's going to jump up and say, no, I want to do cartwheels in a Grambling motion toward the enemy because that's what I feel like doing. Is that what he's suggesting? Do you have any idea that these words have meaning and what he's implying to those morons sitting in that NAACP meeting, which they're applauding? They're actually applauding the demise of their own kids. They're encouraging their children to be stupid for the rest of their lives. They're never going to change the world's view as to what is right and what is wrong. They're trying to make wrong right and right wrong. Now, right is always wrong in this case. Reverend Wright is always wrong. But he's trying to take right and make it wrong and take wrong and make it right. Go tell that to the Chinese. Go tell that to the Chinese people that their precision, their engineering miracles, their technological marvel, their left brains are all wrong, and they should start marching in a Grambling motion. Go tell those in India who have turned an old sleepy country into a giant, a Goliath. Go tell those people in India that they're doing it all wrong, because although they are of color, they're not of African color. And so therefore, they've got it all wrong. They picked up too much of the white man's left brain logic in India and too much of the white man's left brain logic in China, which is why they're moving ahead while Africa is moving backwards. Go tell that to Reverend Wright. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? This has meaning. All of this is meaningful stuff. But again, if it was just that guy with big teeth from Harvard, who I cannot tolerate looking at, that goofball from Harvard professor, I would say, what do you expect from a guy who couldn't get anywhere unless he was full of hate? That's how he got where he is. But we have a man named Obama who, in my opinion, I can't say in my opinion is not a hater. I don't know anymore. I think he may be a good actor. He just may be a good actor hiding all of this stuff inside his soul. Remember, he went to this church 20 years ago when he said he was a confused youth, and he found himself. He found his place in Obama's church. He felt good there, in Wright's church. He felt good there. And now we're supposed to believe by the white liars in the New York Times, the white liars in the LA Times, the white liars at ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox News, that Obama didn't pick up any of this stuff. He didn't hear any of it. We're supposed to believe the white liar left-wingers on CNN that Wright has been taken out of context, that he's really a good man who gave out food to the poor of Chicago, and that he was taken out of context by mad right-wingers, and these are only snippets. We're supposed to believe that fraudulent left-wing hack, Bill Moyers on PBS, who didn't ask one real question, is trying to make this guy look like what he isn't. Why? We're supposed to believe that Moyers, a disrespected old sad clown, who couldn't sell a greeting card outside Pennsylvania Station. He went on his show so that Wright could say the playing of his sound bites was unfair, unjust, and untrue. And yet he comes out after that Moyers puff piece, and he goes before the National Press Club, and he repeats exactly what he said before, only worse. And then he goes and gives a performance at the NAACP, which I am playing for you, which is even worse. And we're supposed to believe that these statements are taken out of context? And yet Obama said in Philadelphia, I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community. No, 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 to mock your reverend, Mr. Obama. No, 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 Mr. Obama. You can disown him, and you better disown him, because he is not the black community, Obama. He is a marginal element of the black community. He is a very marginal element of the black community. He is the equivalent of the polygamy cult. What the polygamy cult is to Mormonism today is what right is to the black church today. That's my comparison. They're marginal elements of a larger religion, Remember what I'm going to tell you. The Trinity United Church of Christ is the most radical black church in this country. And its black liberation theology has been rejected by mainstream black churches. The theology of what Wright is talking about, this theology, is contextually anti-white, anti-American. It is anti-Western. It is as radical as you can imagine. Now, who was the founder of black liberation theology? It was a man named James Cone, C-O-N-E. He founded black liberation theology. And what he did was he took a worldview in which he forged Malcolm X-style revolutionary black nationalism, third world Marxism, which I called Maoism, and tinges of prophetic Christianity. And he called it, quote, a theology which confronts white society as the racist antichrist. Unquote. He says it's a war against white values. And he said that black pastors must do as Wright has, reject white seminaries with their middle-class white ideas about God, Christ, and the church. So Wright comes to Trinity Church in Chicago in the 70s, and he starts to do this stuff. Okay, the middle-class people were shocked by the radicalism. They wanted to get rid of this man. They wanted to distance themselves from the church. Yet Obama came and he stayed. He found his identity there in Trinity United Church. So what does that tell you about the presidential contender, Barack Hussein Obama?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
White teachers in my school freaked out. Why? Because black kids wouldn't stay in their place. Over there, behind the desk, black kids climbed up all on them. Because they learned from a subject, not from an object. Tell me a story. They have a different way of learning.
Different way of learning. Now, if that's not the most racist thing you've heard in your life, I'd like to know what is. You mean black kids can't sit still? They have to climb up over on the teacher's head? And the people in the audience at the NAACP find that amusing instead of throwing the guy out and saying you're the worst, you're like a scourge that has come upon the black community, the worst scourge in 50 years? This guy is setting not only race relations back 50 years in this country, he's setting black children back 150 years. In other words, if these concepts that whites can sit quietly and study and get their master's or a PhD, but blacks can't sit quietly and study. And they have difficulty learning from objects, books, for example. They can only learn from subjects such as rap lyrics on the radio. And that his white teachers were freaked out because the black children did not stay in their place over there behind the desk. Instead, the students, quote, climbed up all over the teachers because they learned from a subject, not an object. Now, how can you learn from a teacher that you're climbing on, as opposed to learning from her as an object, or her object, the book, or by listening to her? But the audience wasn't offended by this concept. They laughed. The reaction in the hall at the NAACP was assertive. Assertive. So now what? We're supposed to embrace the idea that blacks should not be expected to listen attentively to instruction? That's what we're supposed to believe? And we wonder why there's a learning gap between white kids, black kids, Hispanic kids, and Asian kids? It gets worse, which is why we dug up these sound bites. But the issue is not this crackpot who I call a shock frock. The issue is the man who would be king, Barack Hussein Obama. Now, today, the boys at the New York Times, terrified that their agenda for gay marriage has been derailed, went into overdrive, and again, they published a picture of him making him look like the Messiah. Every day, they find a better picture of him, almost in glacial tones. Every day, another picture of him as a Superman. And here he is again on the front page of the New York Times looking like Superman. And the headline says, "An angry Obama renounces ties to his ex-pastor." Renounces ties too little too late, Pinchy. And they go on and they talk about Reverend Wright, and they say in tones sharply different from those Mr. Obama used on Monday when he blamed the news media and his rivals for focusing on Mr. Wright, and far harsher than those he used in his speech on race in Philadelphia, blah, blah, blah. It was different. His comments were not only divisive and destructive, but I believe that they end up giving comfort to those who prey on hate, and I believe that they do not portray accurately the perspective of the black church, Obama said, his voice welling with anger. They certainly don't portray accurately my values and beliefs. Then why'd you sit in the church for 20 years, Mr. Obama? Now, of course, I could ask you that question if you came on the Savage Nation, but you, like McCain, don't want to come on the Savage Nation because you don't want to answer that simple question. Why did you sit in the church for 20 years if you found these concepts so offensive? You really believe that we believe that you only heard snippets and that we racists, all of us in the media are racists if we don't agree with you, we racists in the media took Mr. Wright out of context? But no, we didn't take him out of context. In fact, in his case, these snippets are the context. In fact, last month, Obama said, "I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community." He said it in Philadelphia. At the press club, Wright similarly said that the attacks on him were an attack on the black church. "No, no, 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 no," to mock Reverend Wright. "No, the attacks on you are an attack on you, not an attack on the black church. Because the black church is not you. Not at all." The founder of black liberation theology, James Cone, mixed the worldview of Malcolm X, revolutionary black nationalism, and third world Marxism with some kind of old world prophetic Christianity. And what it was anti-white. The founder of black liberation theology said it was a theology which confronts white society as the racist antichrist, close quote. And he said, "It's a war against white values, and black pastors must do as Wright has done, and that is to reject, quote, white seminaries with their middle-class white ideas about God, Christ, and the church." Now, what does this have to do with Wright and Obama? Listen, I'm reading to you from an article by Rich Lowry now of the New York Post, and here's what Rich says. "Good man," he said. "When Wright came to Trinity Church in Chicago in the 70s, he invited to give the worship a more black inflection and forced a stronger ties to the community. The middle-class parishioners who had beckoned him left when they got a dose of his radicalism. The National United Church of Christ denomination considered distancing itself from the Wright-led church, yet Obama came and stayed." He writes, in search of an identity and a community, Obama founded in Trinity, where he was converted by Wright's signature Audacity of Hope sermon and its black liberation themes of the suffering of blacks merging with that of the ancient Israelites, not to be confused with today's condemnable Israelites. "Obama can't be begrudged his youthful initiation," writes Rich, "but remaining at the church for two decades? Wright is a canker on his candidacy, raising questions about who he really is and about his honesty." And of course, as I said to you, what we're all asking ourselves in America as more of this hateful invective comes out from this shock frock, as I've named him, because he's really worse than a shock frock, but we'll call him a shock frock just for identification purposes. The question is how much of this hatred and twisted theology that Obama listened to for 20 years has penetrated the man's mind and soul. That's the question on the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. If you want to read any of these excellent articles I'm quoting, go to michaelsavage.com. Shock Frock right, top left. It's from the City Journal by Heather McDonald. And the other articles are all there, too, and better ones. And by the way, my website is soaring. I've changed servers. I've changed associations. The rankings are – I was shocked yesterday to learn that michaelsavage.com has more readers than Hannity does, which indicates to me that the radio show is probably much bigger than the ratings would indicate. I think they're very similar, readership of a website promoted by a radio show and the actual audience of the radio show. And you want to hear something else? This is interesting as a side note. The new team did an analysis of where the listeners live who go on to michaelsavage.com. You're not going to believe what I tell you. The two biggest clusters, New York and Texas. I couldn't believe it. Apparently nobody in San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, and San Diego go on to michaelsavage.com. I don't know how the cluster, why they're so large there. I don't get it. But don't call about that. That's a side note. I'm using the website now the way I intended it to be used, which is an addendum to the radio show, not the other way around. In other words, when I talk about something and I refer to an article, I make sure it's there. Because many of you are too busy to have gotten it. You didn't see it. You've been working. I got it. Put it up. Linked it. Bing. And you have it. And, I mean, some of this stuff would make a great library for you, truthfully. And then when you're up there, you know, you look at the donation button and you get guilty and you save money and eventually, and then you look at other stuff and you buy a hat, a cup, a mug, a shoe. You get a haircut, a Savage haircut. Just kidding you. But moving back to the main issue of the day, the issue is black liberation theology. How much of it has penetrated Obama's psyche? And what does it mean for his candidacy? I think that it to me, it's very clear that his candidacy is finished. Now, does that mean he's not going to be nominated? No, not at all. Because I think that the superdelegates wouldn't change their mind if they found a swastika in his pocket. I'm not saying that they would. That would be the opposite of what they'd find, but I'm giving you an example. There's nothing this man could do that would shake the superdelegates away from him. That's how corrupt the Democrat Party system is. Did you know the Republicans do not have a superdelegate system? I don't know if you know that. Did you know that the Republicans do not have a superdelegate system, which is really a system devised by the machine, the Democrat machine, to make sure that nobody can get up there that they don't want up there? I don't know if you understand how corrupt the Democrat Party is. But the corruption of the Democrat Party is far worse than that of the Republican Party, which, by the way, is singing a lot. I'll start singing in a minute from listening to this guy. And speaking of singing, let us now go to clips 8 and 9, just for your
we
listening.
We are taught in 4-4 time that the dominant beat is on 1 and 3. Our band directors, our choir directors, our orchestra directors start us up how? And 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. Now that is the European dominant beat. For Africans and African Americans, it is not 1 and 3, it is 2 and 4. I don't even have to teach you. Y'all just listen to black people clap to this song. Glory, glory, hallelujah. You are clapping on beats 2 and 4. If you got some white friends, they'll be clapping like this, y'all. Africans have a different meter. Africans have a different tonality. European music is diatonic. 7 tones. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, di, do. That's Italian. Europe.
And that's bad, of course. You see, the man has it in for Italians in particular for some reason. They keep coming up in his hateful rhetoric. He really has it in for, he has an Italophobia, I would say. I'd say the Reverend Wright has Italophobia. Maybe he had indigestion in an Italian restaurant at some point in his life. Be that as it may, I don't really know. But he's brought up Italians in a derogatory sense several times. Of course, the Jews are a given. They're no good. Only the ancient Israelites were good. The modern Israelites are bad. You get the drift. I mean, you've heard all this before from the Nation of Islam. It's the kind of stuff that the newspapers on that they hand out and Reverend Farrakhan. And in fact, he's sort of a Christian Nation of Islamist. Wright is a sort of Christian Nation of Islamists. I did call him a shock frock, but I would also add that he's a Christian Nation of Islamists, because this stuff is right out of there. So if you want to believe that, go and believe it. If you think it's good for your children to not march in precision, but to march in a grambling manner, to not be logical, to walk on the teacher's head, and to not learn because it's too white, go ahead. Then you can enslave your children for several generations with that kind of stupidity. But I don't think that would sell in China, a non-white country. Don't think it would sell in India, a non-white country. In fact, I don't think it would sell anywhere but in the United States of America, because of the infection of liberalism. The liberal infection, the white liberal infection, the virus of white liberalism, particularly white liberal radicalism, that virus is who taught this garbage to these people. Make no mistake about it. This is absolute, you could call it Marxism, but it isn't Marxism. It is not Afro-Marxism, it's Afro-Maoism. But I don't want to start splitting hairs with you, because it would be to no avail to do that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I don't have the time in this segment to tell you why this guy is doing it. I've told you that a few different times now over this week, but I want to take some quick callers. Terrence, Houston, Texas, go ahead, please. We're under the time gun.
Hey, what up, Mike? How you doing, man? First, I want to tell you, man, I'm a fan. Today is the first day that I disagree with your views on rights. I don't have an agenda. I'm not a conservative. I'm not a liberal. I'm just a guy that looks at, you know, all angles of life. And basically, man, what he's saying, for us, like with the example that you gave with the difference of the band, he's just giving the difference in culture. Now, keep in mind,
I agree with you. And let me tell you something. Sure, it's okay to have cultural differences with regard to timing and rhythm and things of that nature. No problem with that. But you don't then extrapolate that to a learning theory. In other words, let's say you march to a different drum beat. That's fine. That's a cultural differential. No one would argue with that. But there's only one way to learn trigonometry. There's only one way to learn astronomy. You don't do it by jiggling the telescope and tapping your foot. In other words, you got to learn astronomy by making sure that telescope is pointed straight and steady. You got to learn trigonometry by sitting behind a desk and being bored to death for hours at a time. It doesn't matter what your rhythm is at that point. So he's trying to extrapolate a rhythmic differential and convert that into an educational differential. It doesn't exist, though, Terrence.
I agree with that. Good point. And just on the aspect of him, that's like me saying, hey, if I can't wait for 5 o'clock to listen to Mike Savage because he's all on it. I'm not necessarily saying
I
that.
Hear you. I know that a lot of black guys like me, and I figured out why a long time ago. People say, well, why would a black guy like you, even though they may be liberal or this? First of all, I'll tell you why. They don't define themselves as anything. They've been lied to for so long, for so many years, by people who tell them they're their friend, that they trust nobody. That's A. And B, most of the guys who are black guys who take the time out to listen to Michael Savage do so because they have a super sensitive ear for detecting BS. And they don't hear a lot of it in me.
Exactly. And I agree. I just disagree with, those two statements. But I'm glad that you did clarify it.
I am actually glad you brought up the music thing. And the reason I even chose to play the music thing, even though I knew it was open to a comment like yours, is because I agree with him. No one would argue that it's different. The rhythmic concept is different for Africans than it is for Europeans. And no one's saying that it's inferior, by the way, although I would say everyone would agree that Beethoven is fantastic. It doesn't mean that I don't love Afro-Cuban music. In fact, I didn't dance to Beethoven. I danced to Afro-Cuban music when I was a kid. And by the way, as a side note, Terrence, you should know that when I was 18, I was taught that it's very unhip to dance on 1 and 3, and I was taught to dance on 2 and 4. That's how I learned to dance the mambo, was to dance on 2. That was a big thing when I was a kid. What I'm saying is, so it struck a chord with me. I understand what 2 and 4 is as opposed to 1 and 3. But that's not the point. If the tones and meters are different, that's also a cultural differential. But you don't then extrapolate that, as some of the crackpot inferior intellectuals have tried to do, and say, therefore, black kids can't learn astronomy because it's being taught in a white way.
Right. I don't agree with that. It's just like I heard, the reason why I'm listening to you, man, because I see a big difference in you and your other, conservative counterpoints. I'm not going to do any name dropping, but you get
No, there's no point. I have nothing against any of them except the leprechaun. But go on. I hear you. No, I'm joking. No, I know. Look, everyone has their own audience. The beautiful part about talk radio, Terrence, is that it's a big country, a lot of time zones, and everyone has attracted their own audience. And God bless all of us. There's room for everybody. Hey, when I come back, I got something real hot for you. Be here.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, keeping up the palaver here on the Savage Nation. And by the way, so I know something about palaver, and I got to take off my hat to Reverend Wright. He certainly knows a lot about palaver, which if you look up in the dictionary is very an interesting word. It hasn't been used, almost antiquated, but it is not. Palaver, a long parlay, which is what we really do in talk radio. People say, how do you do it? How do you keep up that monologue, that dialogue? I said, well, it's like dancing on four or dancing on two as opposed to dancing on one. And speaking of that, I think I've been too logical now for over 90 minutes. I got to shift to a little of my right brain now and have a little fun. I've been too left brain for too long on the Savage Nation. I think I'm going to pay for it tonight. Yesterday, I got to tell you something. I got so cooked from the show. I don't know what it was. I was burned, just burned. So I went up to my friend at the North Beach restaurant, and I drank too much. I'll be honest with you. I did. I had two drinks instead of one. And I enjoyed it. I got to tell you, there are nights that a couple of drinks are really great. And that's what does drinking do? Does drinking affect the left brain only or the right brain as well? I wonder about that. Was I trying to just quell my left brain and open up my right brain? I'll have to look into that after the show. I don't really know. But let's get back to the bad reverend. This is like the bad lieutenant. You know, somebody could do a movie about this guy. It's like bad cop. The bad lieutenant, I mean, this guy, the shock frock, I still think is my best invention of the day, word invention. The shock frock then brings up something that I touched on in my musings of the other day of why he did this. And I actually have the transcript in my hand of what I said, and I'm going to read this to you, of what I predicted, what I said, and I didn't know it at the time. I wish I could find it, of why he was doing this. One thing I said was he was doing it for himself. And his own self-gain, no question about it. He went from being an obscure crackpot, America-hating, white-hating preacher up in Chicago somewhere to, let's say, a national figure. Let's just put it to you that way. Now, so as I say, his sudden infamy has launched him into the stratosphere politically. He may even run for Congress. In fact, when Obama loses, he may even run against Obama for the Senate. For all we know, we have to wait and see. But then I go on. I go on to the reality of what I was saying rather than the sarcasm. And I was saying this is all about the money. It's all about the money, and it's his moment in time, and that he knows that we only have a moment in time. He knew that this is his best shot to become famous rather than simply infamous, so he got guys like the baggy-eyed Bolshevik on PBS to give him a softball interview. And now one liberal after another is trying to reinvent this guy and make him into what he isn't. And he knows that there is a book deal and endless lectures as a result of this. Now, I said that the other day, correct? Listen to this clip.
I've got to hurry on. I've taken too much of your time. So let me give you the outline of the rest of this message. You can either fill in the blanks for yourselves, or you can wait for my book that will be out later this year.
So was Michael Savage right again? Was I right there was a book deal? Now, the Brits in a thing called Telegraph UK put out a list of the 100 most influential pundits, which, of course, is a laughingstock. Any Brits who had brains had ancestors who fled Britain and became Americans, and the rest were left behind. That we know. That we know for a fact. So given that they started with a diminished IQ because the gene pool fled on the Mayflower and the rest followed soon thereafter, and what was left behind was of diminished capacity, I don't take their list of influential pundits too seriously. But my guys looked it up, and they said Savage is listed as number 25 on the most influential pundit list by the Telegraph UK. And then they gave me some of the comments by readers on me being ranked number 25. And here's what people said. It says, Michael Savage trails David Gergen? David Gergen? No one knows who he is. Any ranking that puts Savage at 25th is fantasy. That is why you can't believe anything, even a puff piece like this in the liberal media. As Mike says, liberalism is a mental disorder, also apparently a counting disorder. I don't know which listener wrote that. Here's another one. Michael Savage is the most influential U.S. political pundit. He should be rated as number one in his list. He takes on the important issues that the mainstream media dare not touch, and also the politicians left and right, and gives the people, his listeners, the straight truth. He is the only unbiased pundit, talk show, radio host, mover and shaker. But here's the best one. You ranked them 25, they wrote. Michael Savage is the most influential. He single-handedly helped nix the Dubai ports deal. 10 million listeners a week in a less than ideal time slot should tell everyone something. Besides, he is original. The other talking heads are predictable, but you never know where Savage will take you. If another one wrote, if we were to accept cultural commentary as important in political matters, Savage would be in the top five. He is not a favorite of midstream media and therefore not high in midstream polling technique. Let's see. Okay, that write-up for Dr. Michael Savage was a total farce, writes another listener. It was oversimplified and an insult to the man. Get real and get it right. Also, he's the third most listened to on the radio, period. The left has no one who's even close in that arena, so don't qualify it to solely right-wing listeners. Besides, he should have been a lot higher than number 25. Another one wrote, Michael Savage is the smartest of the pack and should be rated first. And finally, Michael Savage is constantly undermined by the press. He has the third most listened to radio audience, four best-selling books, and the libs still try to keep him down. Savage will grow exponentially soon because when everyone realizes that Rush is and has been in bed with Bush for years, someone writes. Well, I have nothing against Rush, but I have an awful lot to say about that, and I'll say it another time. And I'm going to say something about it right now in 10 seconds, 30 seconds or less. I've been thinking about it. Many of you have listened to me for a very long time, these 15 years. You've heard me go up and down. You know, sometimes I come into this show tired. This is allergy season. I've just come through pneumonia. So I've been dragging my feet a little bit. But, and I've also thought about leaving radio. I have over the last year considered retiring, walking out like Johnny Carson and living another 30 years and that never being heard from again. I have. I've gone through it, though. It's over. I am now going to go into sixth gear. I've been riding in fifth gear, but I didn't even know it. I thought I was in overdrive. I was only in fifth gear. I'm about to go into sixth gear, six, that's the number, and after number six, there's overdrive, and I haven't even begun in number six. I've come back almost like the ashes from the ashes myself, and like a phoenix, I will rise from the ashes again, and I'm going to make some predictions at another time as to where talk radio will be in a year or two from now, but I don't have to even tell you, you know it. Who in the world would not want to be in talk radio now? With what's going on in the media, what's going on with Obama and Wright and Hillary and the other one, the invisible one, who McCain, who probably doesn't even know who Wright is. They asked, they probably wouldn't even know who he is. The guy is so out of touch with reality, it's frightening. Somebody attacks Wright, and he says, well, they're out of touch with reality. Then 3 days later, he says, no, you were in touch with reality. I was out of touch with reality. You could run the speech. But, you know, I have nothing against John McCain because of the three of them at this point. On one issue alone, I'd vote for McCain. That's if he could be trusted. You know what that issue is? Taxes, taxes, and taxes. I have in my hand that actual analysis by a stock maven on the fiscal policy of McCain, Obama, and Clinton. I'm not going to give you the long version of it today. I'm going to give you the short version of it. But the presidential contenders' tax policy proposals are very enlightening. And they're very important for you to understand what would happen if Obama became president, what would happen if Hillary became president, and what would happen if McCain became president from one point of view only. Which of the three is pro-business? Which of the three would give more money, let people keep more money in their hands? John McCain, clearly the most pro-business. He would reduce corporate income tax from 35 to 25%. You say, well, that's not fair. You're wrong. You're 100% wrong because that would open up like an engine. The economy would steamroll ahead if you did that. People would open new businesses. They would expand their business. You have to understand business to understand what that would do. However, McCain maintains the status quo concerning individual tax rates. His proposal, they write, is bold in that he wants to repeal the alternative minimum tax and offer an optional two-level flat tax for taxpayers. That's very good stuff. Obama's proposal aims to redistribute from the wealthy to the less wealthy. Now, you know what that is, don't you? You understand what that is, redistribution of wealth. That's communism. Did you understand that? He also plans to tax certain businesses at a higher rate and to raise the capital gains and dividend tax rates. He would turn this country not into Zimbabwe overnight, but into Portugal. We'd become a Portugal. We'd cease to be competitive whatsoever. And if you think there's been a scythe across the American landscape by Bush and the greed of the Republicans and the Democrats, you're right. But that scythe is nothing compared to the scythe of what Obama's tax policy would do. He would turn us into a third world nation in terms of inventiveness, creativity, and business growth. What about Hillary Clinton on taxes? Clinton's proposal also wants to redistribute from the rich to the less rich. Did you know that? She proposed to raise the individual income tax on income of $250,000 or more, which, by the way, is not rich. For those of you who understand what money is today, $250,000 a year is not rich at all. Again, it would be a disincentive for people to invest their hard savings into a business. Maybe they wouldn't open up that yogurt store. Maybe they wouldn't take their life savings and invent an energy drink. Maybe they wouldn't take their life savings and invent a T-shirt company. Maybe they would say it isn't worth it. They'll just tax me to death, and we become sort of a socialist sleepy nation. The difference being is that many of these socialist nations have the perennial income from the North Sea Slope oil. We don't. They do. They can afford Marxism on a short note, on a light note. We can't. So that's the difference between the people, the candidates on a tax front, and I wanted to work that in. That also in the segment I played for you contains some of the readers' comments on why Savage being listed as number 25 in the most influential pundit list by these Brits is absurd. Putting me behind a guy nobody ever heard of is so ridiculous. It shows you why the midstream media shouldn't be trusted for anything. But I'm used to it. I don't really care. I need his rating. I need their ratings. Some unknown guy with bad teeth. Do I care what some unknown guy with bad teeth or some... I don't know these people. What validity do they have? So we can move on. You want me to do a little more of the bad reverend? I can do that. It's like the bad lieutenant with that actor who I don't particularly like. What's his name? Who was in the bad lieutenant? That guy who used to... Does anyone know? Harvey Keitel. Keitel. There's a guy I could never really like as an... I don't know what's wrong with... I don't know why I don't like him as an actor. He could reminds me of an uncle that I did like, but in the negative way. The uncle that I did like looked like him, but he was a nice guy. This guy looks like him, but he always plays mean guys. I don't trust movie stars who always play mean guys because I usually think they're not that tough. Somehow I trust guys who don't play mean guys as being the real tough guys because in my life I found out that the real tough guys are never mean. There's something I've found out in my life. The really tough guys are usually not mean. They're just tough. And the really mean guys are usually not tough. They're just mean. Does that make sense to you? If not, I hope it does. Actually, that was good. Morgan, KNEW, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. All this talk about you counting beats and the music talks, I was actually hoping to get a little Rammstein rap out of you.
Oh, you want me to do it on 2 and 4 or 1 and 3?
2 and 4, please.
No, the funny part is I really did learn to dance a Cuban Mambo on 2. I was told by the older guys or girls who were teaching us that it's real uncool to dance on 1 and 3, that, you know, people are out of step. Do that. And I learned to 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. Play, no, don't play Rammstein. Play play some guys. Don't play Para Vivir for me. Play the other one. Play Guajiro, some Guajiro for me. I want you to hear what 2 and 4 is. I don't want the audience. You can't find it? Well, when you find any... Listen, now you'll hear 2 and 4 because the drum is beat on 2 and 4. The African drum and the Afro-Cuban music you're listening to. Count. 1, 2, 3, 4. 2. You got to push your left foot forward on 2. Your Uncle Eddie pushes the foot forward on 1. He meets a real cool chick after the divorce. He steps on her foot and breaks her arch. He's never going to get the girl with nose rings. That's all I can say. But she probably can't dance. She's probably flopping on the floor like an albatross. I love this music. Like a white guy who has a little bit of rhythm in him, I gotta tell you. That's the truth. You want to analyze why I'm popular? Because I'm a white guy who actually sounds like he isn't. I got rhythm. I got right brain. Oh, this music is unbelievable. I'd rather go into this and stop talking for a minute. Cut out the Bolivar Savage. Listen to this guy's voice, though. I'm now shifting. Because I'm so sick of this guy. You're right. This is called Duende in Spanish. Soul. Somebody who sings with Duende. Just a minute. Give me a minute. I gotta wash my brain. I'd give your left arm to be able to sing with this guy's soul. God, I'd love to be able to sing that. Just sing like this. I'd quit talk radio in a minute. I'd earn 1/100th of what I'm making to do this. Just get up on a stage and do this every night, sweating, drinking cheap drinks, going home with the trombone people, the trumpet people, getting up at a beat-up old Chevrolet. Sounds romantic. It might be. It's always about beautiful women, though, and the loss of a beautiful woman. That's the beautiful thing about the Spanish culture, particularly of that time. Forget it. I'm talking, and I'm just turn it off now. I'm going to get into something I didn't want to go with. But I'm trying to show you there's a whole big world out there, and certainly there's different rhythms, different cultures, different people. And God only knows I'm the last person on earth who doesn't respect that and understand that. But that's not the point. When the bad reverend, the shock frock, when he starts to say that black people have a different rhythm than white people, that's true. But so what? That doesn't mean you take your rhythm into the classroom. You leave your rhythm at home, reverend. You don't bring your rhythm in and start dancing on your teacher's head, Reverend Wright. You leave your rhythm at home, as I did. I mean, when I went to college, I didn't like sitting there and learning. I kind of disliked it. It was real hard for me. I'm like an antsy kid. I couldn't sit still, but I had to. I knew I had to, or I'd wind up being like nothing the rest of my life. So I drove myself. Sure, when I came home from school, I listened to Nat Cannonball Adderley. Because I love the differential in the music. I didn't listen to Beethoven. In fact, I didn't listen to classical music until I was much older. I wasn't ready for it when I was a teenager. I didn't like it at all. It sounded depressing and awful to me. So, you know, just like you're preaching to the choir up to a point. But here's the main point I'm trying to make. He makes a truism about a truth, and then he extrapolates from the truth into a falsehood by using the truth to support his lie. I'll be back.
Inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color, that is laugh.
See, now, he takes a statement like that, which, by the way, has been promulgated by Louis Farrakhan for years, and it's based upon the tragedy of the Tuskegee experiments, and so there's a scintilla of truth attached to the concept, but it doesn't apply to the reality of what he just said. First of all, he says the government invented the AIDS virus to attack people of color. Well, let us assume there was a demonic laboratory set up in secret by the government and it never leaked out, and they developed the AIDS virus. How do you explain the fact that the largest numbers of people who've gotten HIV, the HIV virus, and have gotten AIDS and died of AIDS or are suffering with AIDS don't happen to be people of color in the United States of America, but white men, white males? Of course, that don't try to apply logic to him. See, you have to use right-brain thinking to come to his conclusion. He gives new meaning to the word right-brained. I guess he truly is a right-brained individual. In that sense, I would agree with him, that he's only using his right brain, his W-R-I-G-H-T brain, as opposed to his left brain, which is the logical faculty. But remember, always follow the money. The man is a very good showman. He knows he's got a book out. I was the first to suspect it when I said there must be a book deal, and bingo. Play the book deal again in case they missed it. Play it. Play the book deal.
I got to hurry on. I've taken too much of your time. So let me give you the outline of the rest of this message. You can either fill in the blanks for yourselves, or you can wait for my book that will be out later this year.
Okay, there it is. Always follow the money. He saw his disciple, Obama, getting all of the sunlight on him, and this old reverend was left back in the basement of his church, and he said, how am I going to get a little bit of that sunshine shining on me? And he figured the best way is to start making a mockery of everything that Christianity stands for and see if he could not tarnish Obama in some manner, and by so doing bring some of the sunlight upon him. Remember that? It's always about the money.
Savage.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Children who have difficulty reading from an object and who are labeled EMH, TMH, and ADD, those children can say every word from every song on every hip-hop radio station, half of whose words the average adult here tonight cannot understand. Why? Because they come from a right brain, creative, oral culture like the griots in Africa who can go for 2 to 3 days as oral repositories of a people's history. And like the oral tradition which passed down the first 5 books in our Jewish Bible, our Christian Bible, our Hebrew Bible, long before there was a written Hebrew script, several of the white teachers in my school freaked out. Why? Because black kids wouldn't stay in their place. Over there, behind the desk, black kids climbed up all on them. Because they learned from a subject, not from an object. Tell me a story. They have a different way of learning.
Different way of learning. How interesting. So the way to learn physics or astronomy is to climb on the teacher's head. And the way Einstein learned mathematics was by climbing on his teacher's head in racist Austria, wherever he came from. And the way that Mr. Galileo studied the heavens was by dancing with the telescope. I mean, this is such craziness, it's unbelievable, but this shock frock is worth listening to. He is now comparing hip-hop music to Deuteronomy. He is now comparing the learnings of children who learn to disrespect women and treat them as objects, calling them hoes, and to hate police and shoot police, calling them pigs, to Exodus and Leviticus. It's astounding that any of you would not see the pornography of what he's saying. It's pornographic and it's filth. What this man is saying is actually not just humorous, it's filthy for a number of reasons. Poison is always filthy in that it contaminates. And this filth, this Afrocentric poison, has already crippled a generation of children who have been told by questionable white communists that it's okay to bring it all down, man, that the white uptight society is wrong and they're right. So does any wonder the kid goes in there and he thinks that anyone who learns is a fool? He's being told that they're a fool by the rights of the world and by the wrongs of the world. Now, you want to compare rap music to Deuteronomy, you can go ahead and do it. You can remain in ignorance all your life. But I want to read you Deuteronomy for a minute. Thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be his own treasure out of all peoples that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all peoples, but because the Lord loved you, because he would keep the oath which he swore unto your fathers. Hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt? Know that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God who keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and repayeth them that hate him to their face. To destroy them, he will not be slack to him that hateth him. He will repay him to his face. Thou shalt therefore keep the commandment and the statutes and the ordinances which I command thee this day to do them. That's Deuteronomy. Now you say, what does Deuteronomy have to do with the poison of Reverend Wright? It has everything to do with Reverend Wright, who has extrapolated a little bit of Christianity with Maoist rhetoric, along with Afrocentric double talk, to cripple an entire generation and to poison the universities with this toxicity. Now, I don't care about the academics in the universities who are con men and women, all of them, who've gotten very far with their rubbish, publishing their own journals. I don't care about them. I care about the children whose minds they've poisoned. I care about the fact that the Reverend Wrights of the world are making you suffer because your children have to listen to this garbage to get a bachelor's degree today. That's what I care about. The insanity of the academic world has now been incorporated into practice, and now we're seeing this insanity about to spread into the White House, which is what this show is about today. Make no mistake about it. If the insanity of the university is permitted to penetrate the White House, all is lost in this country. That's why this comedian, this very, very entertaining comedian, the bad reverend, right, is so dangerous, because he shows you what might be in the DNA now of Obama and his wife. And God help us all if that is true. God help us all if that is true. The phone number here, of course, is irrelevant. The lines are sold out. But the articles you must read on Shock Frock Right, and I named them that because the left wing tries to dismiss me as a shock jock to their own detriment. I don't know of any other shock jock who has a PhD from a great university or has written 4 bestsellers, in my own defense. You can call me anything you want. Just make sure that you spell it right. It's S-A-V-A-G-E. But they won't say he's controversial. They won't even refer to him as controversial, the controversial pastor. They won't even say that. He's still a revered pastor. He's the reverend, right? Like, reverend, reverend. What does he revere? Tell me what this reverend reveres but hatred itself. He reveres hating white people. He reveres ignorance. He reveres the most vile form of gutter hatred towards white people that I've ever heard. Only he does it in a very charming manner, doesn't he? He dances and he moves around like a python. He moves around like a snake and entertains the NAACP. And they applaud this reverend because they agree with the reverend. And he has set race relations back 125 years. That's what it's all about. I'll be back. Savage. Barry Goldwater Jr. is a former Republican member of the United States House of Reps from California, 69 to 83. He is the son of the great Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater, who passed away years ago. And he, of course, is the Republican nominee who ran against LBJ for president of the U.S. during the 64 presidential election. Well, he was considered, that is, his father was considered to be the founder of the modern conservative movement. Now, Barry Goldwater Jr. joins us today to talk about his new book, Pure Goldwater. Representative Goldwater, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, thanks very much for having me on the Savage Nation. I'm a great admirer of you, and I listen to you all the time.
Tell us about your book, Pure Goldwater. What is it about?
Pure Goldwater is a book based on my father's most personal thoughts in journals written throughout his lifetime. My good friend from childhood and the author in his own right, John Dean, and I sifted through the legacy of his personal papers that my father left after his death. These were journals that he kept all his life, and not too many people knew about them, but they reflect his thinking, his experiences, and his feelings about life. The book is basically just that, very little commentary. You're going to find the personal thoughts and feelings of a politician who was part of the agenda, who was part of history, and had a significant role in the direction that this country took. You're going to learn about his early beginnings, how he got into politics, what he learned from his father, his heritage, which was very rich from the very early beginnings as immigrants in Arizona. You'll learn about his war years when he used to ferry fighter airplanes across the North Atlantic, and then on into his political life when he first ran for the city council in Arizona and then became a United States senator. What I was impressed with is a lot of discussion about his relationships with various presidents, from Eisenhower all the way up to President Clinton, and his involvement in the Republican Party, and how the conservatives took over the party back in the 60s, away from the Eastern established liberals who dominated the Republican Party at those times. It's full of gems, full of inside thoughts. For instance, John F. Kennedy was a personal friend of his, and yet they were in different parties. But they planned to run against each other in the 1964 elections, and they planned to do it differently than what they do now. They would both campaign together. They'd both get on the same airplane, fly around to a city, get off, and without makeup people and handlers, they would stand up like the Lincoln-Douglas debates and debate each other. Get back on the plane, go over to the next city, and do the same thing all over again. That kind of camaraderie, give-and-take, debate, politics, you don't find today. And so the book is full of his experiences. So it's a book full of history that's very comparative to today. Back in 1960s when we had the Vietnam War, and we had the peaceniks, the people who objected to the war, compared to today with Iraq, you have people that are for it, people that are against it. You had back in those days when conservatives questioned whether Nixon was a conservative, as did conservatives today questioning whether McCain is a conservative. So there's a lot of history, there's a lot of comparative information that could very well have taken place today.
Well, what about your father's relationship with Richard Nixon?
His relationship with Richard Nixon lasted and spanned over 30 years. My father supported him all the way, and then only to be disappointed late in Nixon's career when Watergate took him down, and it was disclosed that Richard Nixon was a liar, and he lied to my father, and that was one of the big disappointments of his political career. Almost wanted my father, he said in the book that he has never felt so bad and so down in his life when Richard Nixon lied to him, and he almost wanted to quit.
How do you think your father would feel about today's Republican Party?
Well, I think my father would be a little bit upset with the way the country has gone since his involvement in politics. You know, my father was a strong believer. He's a constitutionalist. He's a libertarian, so to speak. He believed in the strength of the individual. The concept of the Constitution was that power starts with the people. And then it goes to the local government and then the states and eventually up to the federal government. But what we've seen since, I guess, the New Deal and Roosevelt was more and more responsibility for our welfare, our lives, has taken over by the federal government and the Congress and the President of the United States. And I think this disturbed my father greatly because if you allow the government to take over, they become the master. Government programs cost money, and entitlement programs have gone gone through the roof, and consequently, all this costs money, and it's something that takes away from our freedom as an individual.
Do you see anyone to put us on track?
Well, you know, I think if you left things up to the individual, to the citizens of this country, they don't want government in their lives. I don't think they want, and especially small businesses overcome with excessive regulations every time they turn around, taxes that deplete their resources. Is there a spokesperson out there? I don't know. The whole country has moved somewhat to the left, and we hear Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton promising people health care, free health care. And that's quite a departure from free market, free enterprise system, where the government would provide those kinds of things. We've watched the usurpation of states' rights, and the greatest example of the federal government taking over the responsibility of the state is this driver's license that the federal government's mandating on all the states. Up to this point, the states took care of driver's license, but now they've got this smart card, this biometric card with all your personal information that the federal government is mandating on the states. That's a small example of over the years the federal government has taken over the state responsibility.
How do you feel about the changes in the election process?
Well, I personally think that this process has gotten out of hand. I don't know about you or your listeners, but I think 2 years is long enough for a presidential race. I know it concerned my father the millions and millions of dollars that are having to be collected and spent to allow such a race to take place in over 2 years. My father wrote in the in his journals, and they appear in the book Pure Goldwater, just how upset he was over the cost, the escalating cost of political campaigns. He suggested in the journal that we should eliminate, we should regulate the time that a campaign is allowed to be conducted, and by eliminating the time or limiting the time, you would consequently limit the amount of money. So he talked about this 20 or 30 years ago, and what is happening right now is out of hand, in my opinion. And I think he would also be concerned about this, the character kind of assassinations that go on. I mean, what we hear in the press and in the, especially on TV, are these talking heads that condemn candidates because of their association, because of their religion, because they cried at a campaign stop. Instead of talking about issues and informing people where these candidates stand on such things as prescription drugs and the No Child Left Behind and the energy problems and the Patriot Act and privacy, you never hear really too much substance on the issues, information that the voter needs to have an informed knowledge to cast a vote. You know, we have three candidates, all who served in the United States Senate. They have a voting record. And I would suggest to our talking heads, our commentators, take a look at that voting record and compare one candidate with another. And then talk about substantive issues and about their positions on things that really matter. I think my father would be extremely upset, and he spoke about this in Pure Goldwater, that candidates today are judged by their religion and not by what they stand for. And I think we need to take a hard look at the process and what the voters really need to be informed.
Mr. Goldwater, thank you for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, Mike, this has been a lot of fun being on your show. I wish you well and happy trails.
Savage.
A very good thing, because I'm thinking of Rosa Parks. Had she not been angry and said, no, I'm not going to get up.
That's
I'm
right.
tired.
My feet
righteous
hurt.
Righteous rage.
It's a righteous anger.
And I think
that's
me.
What Jeremiah has. No, but I'm saying he had a righteous anger there. And Martin Luther King was angry.
Of course.
Angry. That's chick talk on some television show trying to write off Wright's hate speech for anger, righteous anger. But then again, if you had an angry white man, that would be evil. But Reverend Wright, they call him Jeremiah. Well, there's other news out there. There's loads of other news out there. Albert Hofmann, the father of LSD, dies in Switzerland at the age of 102. Wow. I guess it beats chicken soup. Wednesday, April 30th, 2008. Albert Hofmann, the father of the mind-altering drug LSD, whose medical discovery corrupted millions in the 60s hippie generation, has died. He was 102. So my mother was wrong. I mean, you know, drugs, sex, and rock and roll, seems like it worked for him, at least the drugs part. We don't know about the sex and rock and roll. Hofmann died yesterday at his home in Berg, said Doris Stuker, a municipal clerk in the village near Basel, where he moved following his retirement in 1971. For decades after LSD was banned in the late 60s, Hofmann defended his invention. He said, I produced the substance as a medicine. It's not my fault if people abused it. Now, those of you who have used LSD know how dangerous it is. He thought originally that it could be used to uncover psychological problems. He thought that it could uncover, break blockages down. And because the drug exaggerated inner problems, I'm talking about LSD, since we have whacked out politicians now and whacked out reverends and everybody's whacked out of their minds, I don't know whether it's inappropriate to talk about LSD, but it seems to me like we're living in an LSD nation. Sometimes I wake up and I feel as though I'm on LSD watching Reverend Wright being passed off as a legitimate angry man. Obama as a legitimate candidate for the presidency of the United States of America without any track record. No statements that he's ever written that anyone remembers. He didn't cure polio, never served in the military. Of course, that doesn't matter anymore in America. Neither did Cheney or Bush, really. Bush was the National Guard. But he's done nothing of note. Of course, he wouldn't be the first person who's done nothing of note, but we deserve better than that. So it seems to me as though we all feel those that we're on LSD when we watch this going on. As I said, LSD exaggerated inner problems and conflicts, and so it was hoped that it might be used to recognize and treat mental illnesses such as schizophrenia. In fact, for a while, Sandoz sold LSD-25 under the name Delicid, and encouraged doctors to try it themselves. It seems to me that many of our doctors today did try it themselves. Many of them who prescribe Ritalin probably used LSD, and they think that all drugs are good. It was one of the strongest drugs in medicine. 1 gram enough to drug an estimated 10 to 20,000 people for 12 hours. 1 gram, that's a quarter of a teaspoon, could drug 10 to 20,000 people for 12 hours. Now, as you know, LSD was elevated to international fame in the 50s and 60s as a result of another Harvard lunatic, Timothy Leary, who embraced the drug under the slogan, turn on, tune in, drop out. But then eventually, the psychedelic trips gave way to horror stories about people going on murder sprees on LSD, jumping out of windows while hallucinating. Some thought they could be congressmen and actually became congressmen. Some professors thought they could be professors and became professors. And, of course, many heavy users suffered permanent psychological damage, which is why we have the U.S. Congress as we do today. And so, as a result, the once sane U.S. government banned LSD in 1966, and other countries followed suit. But, to be honest with you, some psychiatrists in Switzerland still say that LSD and MDMA, known as ecstasy, can produce results where conventional psychotherapies fail. They say they help overcome the wall of denial that some patients build up. Now, my answer is, without a wall of denial, we'll wind up as animals in the gutter. In fact, it's building up walls of denial that makes us civilized. It's breaking down walls of denial that turn us into raving lunatics. You understand all of this? 1-800-449-8255. I mean, I could switch from the insanity of Reverend Wright and such to LSD, if you'd like, with LSD horror stories. That would be a nice one. Because if I'm going to turn the TV on and I'm going to watch Hillary Clinton on The Leprechaun, with the leprechaun pretending that he's a conservative interviewing a liberal to expose her when I know the whole thing was orchestrated in advance or she wouldn't have gone near him. And if that doesn't tell you who the leprechaun is, then you're on LSD and I'm not. Washington, D.C., Amy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Gone. And guys, can you check the callers? Are they all there? Or the, they're back to the Elmers in the thing. We did good for 2 hours, but now the staff has gone back to the Elmers. And that's okay. It happens. It's a long show, 3 hours, and you can't expect people to focus for that long. Sometimes the callers are not there, and you press, and there's like a dead zone. You want to go on with the right thing, with the right brain? W-W-R-I-G. It gives new meaning to the right brain. Do you think there'll be a new movie out called The Bad Reverend, starring him and Al Sharpton? They can make it actually a sequel. The Bad Reverend could be the first one, a documentary about him giving his hate speech and dancing on the stage and mimicking and mocking and rolling his eyes. The second installment, like, you know, The Bad Reverend 2, could be The Bad Reverends. They could do him, they could start with the Freddy's Fashion Fire show, egging people on with a bullhorn and seeing the flames go up and people dying. And then they could show him on Fox News as a dignified reverend, even though no one knows if he ever got a degree, a divinity degree. I'm having a good time here. I'm actually, what I'm doing here, and I'm not a stupid guy. I know what's going on. I'd say a large percentage of the audience is watching a leprechaun and Hillary. I understand that. It's a one-shot deal. It's a big deal, very big deal. And he will do what Newt Gingrich tried to do last week by saying the reason he took the money from of Al Gore to go on the global warming lie campaign was because he wanted to make sure that a conservative voice was on the global warming campaign, which, you know, is just a double talk. See, this turns me – remember I said why black people listen to me, a lot of black guys who are searching around. They may not be that educated. They may be. I don't know. But they're listening to me because they want to hear, like, various opinions. Like I told you, my father read 6 newspapers a day, and I asked him why, and he said, I want a variety of opinions so I can make up my own. And they've also been lied to so much by so many people who say that they're friends and rip them off, blah, 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 that they hear me and they don't hear really – they hear the, like the ring of truth. Hemingway said, just remember, the people can hear the ring of truth. They hear it. It's intuitive. You can't lie about it. Sometimes you read something and you know it's true. How do you know that? Can you quantify what's true and what's not true? Sometimes you have to go with your intuition. And in particularly, anyway, let's leave it at that. It's a human thing. Sometimes you have to go with intuition. So I'm intuitive enough to know what's going on with my audience right now and with this interview with a Leprechaun and Hillary. I know it's a big deal. Good for him. And I also know that he's going to do just what Newt Gingrich did to justify a puff piece with her, because you know she's too smart and too tough to ever expose herself to real questions like about the sniper fire, what she will do with various things that we fear from her and her past track record. None of that will come up. I don't have to turn it on to know that. Just as I knew that Wright was doing this for the book tour that was coming up, I know how it all works. It's a busy world and everyone's trying to make a buck. And everybody is, remember that the operational word is greed, 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 with everyone but me. Now, I can almost prove that. I can almost prove that I'm the least greedy person in the top tiers of the media. Do you know why? I don't do lecture tours. I don't do live events. I could do one every night. I could fill an auditorium somewhere in America once a week. I could do 50 lectures a year if I wanted to. I could do 10 gigantic stadium tours a year if I wanted to. I don't want to. I'm not greedy. The guys who do it, I don't know where they get the desire or for that kind of money. I don't know what they need to do with the money. Isn't there enough? Don't you make enough at a certain point? How much do you need? How much more do you need than a few million dollars a year? What do you need the money for? What? It becomes an obsession at a certain point. And it also warps you. I've learned that. It's taken a long time in my life, and there were years I had nothing. And most of it you give back to the government anyway, so they can't fix the roads with it. The reason you give it back to the government is so they can spend it on KBR in Iraq and charge $75 to do a 15-pound bunch of laundry. Did you hear about that? What went on? I started to play it yesterday. KBR is a contractor. Isn't it owned by Halliburton, Beowulf? It used to be owned by Halliburton. So there were congressional hearings about contractors' corruption in Iraq. Now, I told you that a military guy called the show and told me for the first time in U.S. history they have contracted out various things that soldiers used to do. Why would they contract out meals at $16 a tray provided by KBR? And if a soldier went back for a second helping, the government got billed another $16, unless this was total out and out rotten profiteering of the lowest order, war profiteering, telling us they're doing it to free the Iraqis and to fight Al-Qaeda, when in fact, we all know what's going on. The reason this war is going on so long is because it's a better way to bleed the taxpayer. We all know that if they really wanted to win, they could have won 5 years ago. They don't want to win. It doesn't matter whether we should have been there, shouldn't have been there, when we should get out, shouldn't get out. What matters is it's totally and absolutely being run the wrong way, and it's being run strictly for profit at this point. That's what most Americans have come to conclude at this time, which is why George Bush is the most unpopular president in American history. It's because of this issue. So when you hear a guy coming back who worked for KBR, a contractor, do you have the one on the laundry deal? No? No. Again, the glue. Could you guys stop with the Elmers already for two more minutes? I don't even have a lot of more time here. Let me hear clip 32 before you find laundry.
It was policy to deliberately inflate the numbers of troops who use the facilities. We were instructed by our supervisors to do a deliberately misleading count of the number of people who use the facilities.
Okay, hold it. Now, this is a woman giving the truth. She's Linda Warren testifying that some KBR employees were looting Iraqis' objects from palaces in Iraq under the direction of KBR management. It gets worse. You're not going to believe this. Listen to 31.
One practice that was common by the time I got in country was a drug deal. A drug deal was where KBR employees stole items out of Connex boxes that were designated to the military, and they used them to barter with. And some of these items were even given to Iraqis. If they wanted something from out in the town, they would barter with these items.
Do you have any idea what war profiteering really is? Now listen to 33.
The impact that year had on me has been profound, and there were many times when I was ashamed to call myself an American working for Halliburton in Iraq.
You hear this?
I was afraid to talk about these events, and yet when I returned to the States, I contacted members of Congress because our sons and daughters who are fighting over there, they deserve better than this. My son, who was in Fallujah with me, deserves better than this.
See, the woman's crying from the heart from the corrupt men and women in the U.S. Congress who have given this contract to KBR. And in other times, they would be found out and they would be put into a prison for the rest of their lives and all of their assets seized, the assets of their wives and daughters and uncles and mothers and grandmothers. But we live in different times, don't we? Now, why do I say we live in different times where corruption is systemic and endemic, where the infection of corruption is now systemic and endemic and accepted? Why do I say it? I say it because the Democrats ran a good number on you liberals. They said that the Republicans were corrupt and they were running the war and they wanted it over and they get it over. And Nancy Pelosi came around screaming and yelling that when they're elected, they're going to end the war. Now you find out they're not going to end the war. Why is it that the Democrats are not ending the war? John Murtha, who condemned Marines to some of them to almost execution with his big lies. Jack Murtha, Pennsylvania Democrat, former Marine hero in his own mind. Jack Murtha, the biggest recipient of pork barrel spending in American history, is suddenly no longer really vocally anti-war because he never had it so good. See, all the Democrats really wanted was some of the money the Republicans were stealing. Now that the Republicans wisened up and said, you know what? If we let them steal as much as we're stealing or more, this thing could go on for 100 years. Schmucks out there will pay 10 a gallon. What choice do they have? Are they going to drill an oil thing in their backyard? We could charge them $20 a gallon. What are they going to do? We could charge $50 for a pound of rice. What are they going to do? They're a bunch of sheeple out there. They'll do nothing. They'll do nothing. They let a con man get away with being the president for 7 years. How are they going to do anything about $20 a gallon gas? They wouldn't stop the war, even though they know it could have been ended 5 years ago. So what are they going to do, stop us from charging them $10 a gallon for gas? You think they don't think this way? You think they're not laughing behind closed doors like this, some of them? Now find the KBR thing on laundry and hear this one. You find a laundry one? Listen to this.
After this episode, I was forced to work in the laundry where I saw the inflation of laundry figures. While at the laundry, the KBR supervisor told me that over half the equipment was broken. I put in several written requests for repair parts and asked the camp manager to move two heavy-duty washers and dryers that were stored in a warehouse to the laundry so that we could use them. No parts ever arrived. The equipment stayed in the warehouse, and the Marines suffered. The laundry was often wet when it was returned to the Marines because the equipment did not work properly. Even with these shoddy laundry facilities, I was told by the laundry supervisor that KBR charged the government $75 to just wash one bag of laundry, which was normally less than 15 pounds.
Did you hear that? KBR, a contractor, charged the U.S. government $75 to do one bag of laundry for the U.S. Marines, which was about 15 pounds, and they got away with it. Why? Who stopped them? And so in this case, I totally 100% support the Democrats for conducting these hearings. The only thing is I know nobody will pay a dime for what they've done. Just as the investigation of what happened on Wall Street with the meltdown of Bear Stearns. Oh, we're going to get to the bottom of it. Chris Cox, Security Exchange Commissioner. You hear, hear, gavel down. Now let's all go out and have a steak. Let's all have a steak at a $500 bottle, a Jeroboam of the best. Because we can do anything we want. We're the masters of the universe. And they're nothing but sheeple out there. I'll be right back.
Savage.
On. I've taken too much of your time, so let me give you the outline of the rest of this message. You can either fill in the blanks for yourselves, or you can wait for my book that will be out later this year.
Oh, my God. Did I tell you yesterday it was a book tour that he was doing this whole thing? A, to run down Obama, who he's jealous of, and B, to use him to step on, you know, get some of the sunlight and make a buck. I guarantee you that Larry King is just losing sleep over this one, you know, to try to get him on there first and kiss his ring. Anyway, I think we've had a lot of fun today so far in the Savage Nation. There's a lot of serious stuff, too. I hope you got something out of it. I refer you back to michaelsavage.com, where you will find Shock Frock Right, the great article by Heather McDonald from City Journal. It's really, you got to look at this article. There are other great stories, not just about that. The intelligent design hoax is a big one. by John Derbyshire. Fabulous article. It's on the right, four down. I know many of you believe in intelligent design and don't believe in evolution. Read it first. Then we'll argue amongst ourselves tomorrow. And all racial profiling complaints dismissed by the LAPD. I mean, so crazy. Today, racial profiling? Are you kidding me? They even accused the cop in L.A. of racial profiling for pulling over a black guy, even though the cop pulled the car over at night in the dark and the windows were all black, blacked over. He didn't know who was in there. They just violated the law. They accused him of racial profiling. This is the game now of gangbangers. They get a shyster lawyer from the ACLU who all should be rounded up, put into work education camps, and their assets seized. Every member of the ACLU has cost you personally several hundred thousand dollars over a lifetime in lawsuits, lost jobs, and a criminal mayhem in the streets as a result of what they've done to this country. If I had the power, I would close them down under RICO statutes. I would seize their assets, even if they were shopped to their grandmother, and I would put them away for 25 years at hard labor. Everybody who runs the ACLU is an enemy of the state. They are not your friend. They do not stand for freedom of anything. They stand for destruction. They're the ones who made sure that no voter ID law would pass. They were the ones who made sure that illegal aliens voted in this country. The ACLU makes sure that your child can see child pornography in a library. The ACLU makes sure that every war memorial that has a cross on it, the cross is snapped off. The ACLU are vile barbarians and evil to the core. And they're the greatest threat to this republic, in my estimation. But then again, I'm an unknown talk show host with very little influence, and so therefore my ideas, although they may be profound to you, have little impact whatsoever. They say that conservatism is dead. Well, looking at John McCain, I would say they're right. But that doesn't mean that we're dead. It just means that we're not out there right now, but we will be back. I would say save your conservative money. The conservative movement shall rise again. Save your conservative dollars. The conservative movement shall rise again. I want to thank you for listening to The Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, Mike shall shift into fifth or sixth gear tomorrow.
Savage.